we begin just briefly what we went over Wednesday night, just real brief. It's how to build your dream home. It's a place for couples and kids and the comfort of being at home. The entire structure depends on the foundation. We learned that. And we talked about the little song that is sung by many of the kids' classes. Anybody remember what it is?
Wise man builds his house.
Yeah, okay, good. Somebody was listening anyway. The wise man builds his house on the rock. And we talked about that and the permanency of a good foundation that had to be laid. And also the stability of a family depends on also the ability to do those things in the relation with Christ and how He is to be the foundation for us. He is the foundation for every relationship we found in Ephesians, the second chapter, verse 19. We're no longer citizens, but fellow citizens with the saints and the members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ Himself being the chief cornerstone. We talked about that, and then we went on to talk about also involved is the our relationship with the government, our employers, and those kind of things that... It's a whole different scenario when you are a Christian, and when you got Christ as a foundation in your life, then you're going to treat others different from the way the world treats sometimes. And some of you have been involved in work-related places, and you know how some people feel about their employers and how they do when the boss is not around. Some of you know that, and I know when I was growing up and younger, a lot younger in life, and I was working, and I was working my little head off, you know, and like I should, and everybody should, but, you know, an older guy came around, he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm working." He said, "Well, the boss is not even around." I said, "It doesn't matter to me." I said, I've got to work. That's what I'm supposed to do. "Man, you got to learn. You don't work unless the boss comes by." And I said, no. "That's not me. Thank you. I just go on with my work." And they even accused me of... my first job was grinding on metal and buffing metal to get the mill scale off of it. And they even accused me of, instead of waiting for the crane to turn the piece over, they accused me of laying on the floor, getting underneath and grinding. But I don't remember doing that, but who knows, I may have, I don't know. But anyway, I did my best, and it was noticed. Actually, he was the second in from the top in the company, came by one day and said, "I've been noticing you," and said, "You're really working." He said, "Would you like to be an inspector?" "Whoa, he said, I don't want you to just start out, but I want you to train with the one we've got." I said, "It's fine." So anyway, those kind of things are there. When you do your job, do it well, you'll be noticed. And the people, not only your fellow workers will notice it, but they'll also, the upper officials a lot of times will notice it. Okay, let's move on. Anyway, that's how we should do those things. We talked about commitment. The husband joined with his wife. We learned that commitment is being dedicated, devoted, having allegiance, a loyalty, faithfulness, fidelity, all those kind of things. We make a promise, and we make a vow that we're going to do, we're going to stay, we're going to be committed, a pledge, an oath, contract, whatever you want to call it, we're going to do those things. And there's along with this commitment comes responsibility, obligations, duty, liability, task, those kind of things that we learned about. And there's two things that you cannot do. What's one of them?
Lie.
Can't go back to mom and dad. No, 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 no. Why? That's not what the scripture says. The scripture says don't do it, right? So you don't go back to mom and dad. And the second one is?
No divorce.
Well, yeah, that's kind of involved. But it's even goes beyond that in a sense. It's giving yourself to somebody else. Yeah. It may not even be divorce, but that's true. Divorce is one of the things. But even before it might be a divorce, is having a relation with somebody else. That's just no. You just can't do those kind of things. And have a true commitment to your marriage and to others. You've got to be someone who can be depended on. Someone you can, they can bank on you, being there, count on you. Somebody that they can look to and expect good things from you. That's commitment. And then, when we move on to the next one, I'm getting behind on my thing here, is trust. We learn about trust, and trust is those kind of things that we oftentimes think of, and along with confidence, belief, faith, sincerity, assurance, those kind of things. It's trust that you should be exemplified in your life when in your marriage. But it's a believe in the reliability, truth, ability, the strength of. You should never have trusted her if somebody that you didn't trust. You know, after you've married someone and you know that they have not been very true all along, trustworthy, you should have never married her to begin with, or him, whatever it might be. But it's a commitment that you need to make. The lack of trust in a marriage presents problems. And we learn that from the story of Samson in Judges, the 14th chapter. You remember he went to Timnah to find a wife. And he found one that he really liked, you remember? And he saw this woman and he wanted his folks to, that's who I want. Well, son, that's a Philistine. You can just imagine, you know, how his parents felt about this. Well, that's the one I want. I'm determined that's the one I want. So they made all the necessary arrangements. And if you remember, he went down and he saw this woman. He loved her. And so they decided to set up the wedding. And they go down, and on the way down, some things happened. You remember what it was that they ran into on the way down to Timnah, him and his parents? What did they run into? Hello? Y'all are here, right? What did they run into going down there? What's Samson? All right. He killed a lion, and had killed it earlier, I guess. But the bees had made a nest in this animal carcass. And from what I understand, that is so unusual. That's just never done. This was so unique. But anyway, he got some, as he went by, he got some honey from this, out of this lion carcass. Been dead a while, but anyway. So he goes on down to Timnah and he poses a riddle to the Philistines. And the riddle is, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong something sweet. He said, now if you can tell me the answer to that, then in 7 days I'll give you all 30 of you, a change of garment. And if you don't, you're going to give me 30 changes. Okay? No problem. And they thought, they couldn't figure it out. So finally, they went to his wife and said, you know, you've got to find out what's going on. And they kept on, and she kept hounding Samson. Tell me the real. He said, look, I haven't even told this to my mother and father. Why should I tell you, you know, basically? And so they did. Finally, she cried. He cried and wept for 7 days. And finally, on the seventh day, he finally told her what it was. What did she do immediately? She went and told her fellow Philippians. I get it, man. Anyway, she went and told all her people, and the Philistines, what Samson didn't know was, they had gone to her and said, if you don't find out, we're going to burn your dad's house and you and him, everybody, family. Samson didn't know this. So, they told him the answer to the riddle. And of course, how did Samson view his wife at that point? What statement did he make about her? He viewed her as a heifer. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you wouldn't have found this out. What's that saying about his thought about his wife? You know, he didn't have a real good opinion at that particular point, did he? But it's a challenging thing for us to give ourselves wholly to a union, to another person that you can't trust. If you can't trust someone, it's hard to give your whole self to them. And that's why we gotta be a trusting person. You'll always be tempted to withhold part of yourself if you don't trust someone. You're gonna kind of shy back and not be fully involved with this person. The proverb in Proverbs, it talks about the virtuous woman. In verses 11 and 12, it talks about the heart of the husband, how he safely trusts her. And I'm going to catch up here one day. But they're very trustworthy. That means that you can rely on them without any problem. And she does him good and not evil. That's what this verse 11 and 12 says. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. We have to remember that. That goes kind of for the husbands as well. And we learn that in 1 Peter. Well, it's not on that one. In 1 Peter, the third chapter, it also talks about Sarah, how she felt toward her husband. What did she call him? Lord. Does that mean that she held him in esteem like the Lord? No. You know, we see this a lot of times, especially in England and those kind of places, you know, when they had maids and butlers and those kind of things, and they would walk in and the answer was, yes, my Lord, you know, and do maybe even a courtesy, you know, whatever. And those kind of things is similar to what Sarah's doing, but she was also showing that amount of respect, you might say, to him. We'll get to that in just a minute. The husbands in verse 7 of 1 Peter 3 says, husbands likewise dwell with them with understanding. That means you're going to give honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel. Does that mean she's can't get around very good? No, that's not what it's talking about, not the weak part. What is the weak part you're talking about? The weaker vessel.
fine china?
Like fine china. Yeah, it's like fine china. And that's a kind of a good scenario because, you know, you fine china, you keep up in the cabinet and you wait for the, just the right time to use it, right? Well, it's not always true. Because I was out working, helping Miss Cooley the other day, and I had to give her medicine. So I reached up in the cabinet, just grabbed a cup, you know, got it down, you know, put her pills in it. It's easier to get the pills out of that than it is out of the little container. So I had that down, and I was over there close to her, and she says, "Oh, you got my fine china out." Yeah, she said, "I'm saving that." I said, "Saving it for what? You're nearly 87 years old, you know." I said, "If you don't use it now, I mean, you ain't going to use it, you know." "Oh, but I'm saving that." Well, I got the point, needless to say, you know. So I washed it and put it right back real quick. So those are the kind of things that... that we want to remember that wife is a weaker vessel. She's a tight person, and the Lord knew this all along. A lady, I'm sorry, just can't take some of the stress that a man can take. A lot of times, a lady will give in and break down due to stress and those kind of things, where a man can handle it. Now, that's just the way women are made, and it's not anything wrong with that. You're supposed to be the weaker vessel, according to what the Scripture says. That's not mean to say that you're just a weakling of some kind. That's not what that's talking about. So, we trust the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not to thine own understanding. Proverbs 3 and verse 5. But failure in these things destroys trust. And we don't want to fail in doing our part in building our family and making the foundation good and steadfast. So we now move on to respect. Honor and respect. And when we look at respect, we find that respect is something you esteem or regard, and high admiration you give reverence to, honor, polite courtesy. You know, you love that person so much that you care for these kind of people. And we look at under respect, we see that in Ephesians, the 5th chapter, verse 33, it says, "Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respect her husband." In Ephesians 6:2, "Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." This kind of deals with how honor and respect should be granted and given by our children as they grow up. In the Song of Solomon, the first chapter in verse 2, talks about the Shulamite woman that talks of how she looks at her husband, how she treats and does him. And that's respect, but it also gets into the fact of how close and united they are. And we'll get to that in just a few minutes. There's a mutual respect in the foundation, the pillar of a good home. Husbands and wives, eventually parents and children, must possess a high positive regard for one another. So much that goes on in the home depends on it. A wife submitting to her husband, doing those things that she has to do. There are things that a wife is required to do and she should do. keeping the home and those kind of things. There's possibility of a little bit later in life you have children, and if you've got children, and they're a blessing from God, and count them that way. Some people do not care about their children. They don't want their children. It's a sad situation. I know, because we had three children, seven grandchildren, and three of those are married, two great-grandchildren, but we also had 16 foster children in our home. And those are the kind of kids that would break your heart. We even had some that the parents carried to DHR and said, you know, we just don't want them. You know, that's hard to fathom that there are people out there. And yet you see abuse rampant throughout the United States on how children are treated. We had one little girl who was just beaten to a pup, both eyes black, her arms black and blue, her feet and all around her trunk, they're all black and blue. And it's hard to deal with, and it's hard to imagine that anybody could treat a child that way. But yes, they're out there. And that's not what we're to do. We're to respect our wives, our husbands, and our children for what they are and who they are. Well, honor and respect in every family. Without mutual respect, family members will be unable to fulfill their God-given role in the home. Well, we're going to get on into love, and this is going to be a little sensitive in some of these things, and yet it needs to be talked about. Okay? Love is one of the things that the home is built around. There, and the English language is so difficult when you talk about love because, you know, we say, man, I love my car. I love that supper you fixed. I love my work. I love our friends. I love our Creator. You see what? And we say those kind of things and not realizing the difference in love. But there is a difference in those type loves. And we're going to talk about that just for a moment this morning. The Greek word for love, there's three different ones. Eros was a sexual love. Phileos was a friendship love. And agape was a spiritual love that manifests itself in self-satisfying devotion. Each of these kinds of love is vital to a marriage. And the third, agape, is a strong pillar in the foundation of the home. When we talk about romantic love, this is the desire to become and to remain lovers. That's the foundation of many homes. That's how our homes usually begin. We find someone we really love. Back in Old Testament times, how did that happen? What about Isaac? Anybody remember how he met his wife? Yeah. She was brought from a far country where his mother and those come from, and she was brought to him, and he saw her and he loved her. Period. He took her in and she became his wife. Yeah, it's not somebody that he dated for a long time to find out backgrounds and those kind of things. What kind of parents did you have? You know, those kind of things. No, that wasn't part of it. Winston Churchill says it starts, he says, with a man falling in love with a girl when no superior alternative has been found. Well, that's true. You see a young lady that you really like. I know that happened with my granddaughter right here at Eastside. they were coming to the summer classes that we were having here, and she had already gotten here and sat down, and she was fooling around getting something out of her purse, and this fellow walked in and said, "Man, I don't know anybody here." And she just, without looking up, said, "Come on over and sit with us." This big, nice, husky, good-looking guy came. She looked up and saw him, and it was like, And that girl's name was Stacy Greer, and she met Ben Walker. And I believe it's like 6 months later they were married. But he went home he called his mother that night and said, "I found the girl I'm going to marry." And he did. Good story. I love those kind of stories. And he's a good, faithful Christian. Both of them are, with two of my great-grandchildren. So that makes them even better. The Song of Solomon details for us the place of falling in love. There we learn that God celebrates romance and sex in a husband and wife relationship. And we find this in the Song of Solomon, and we alluded to that just a little earlier, where she talks about, "Let him kiss me with the kiss of his mouth," Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 2, "for your love is better than wine. Come, let us take our fill of love till the morning. Let us delight ourselves with love." Proverbs 7, 18. Proverbs 5, 18. "Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love." There's a place for closeness and a good relationship with your wife. My mother, bless her heart, she was one who loved her husband. And she was one who was concerned about their relationship, keeping it a good solid foundation. My dad loved to play tennis when they were younger in life. So he would go to the public tennis courts and play tennis. And he loved that. And that's fine. That's okay. Well, Mom went one time. And guess who else was there playing tennis? Well, there was other young women there in these little short, skippy skirts out there playing tennis, not with him, but maybe in the same courts or wherever. Well, she went home that night. And she made the determination, "You don't have to look at them. He's got me." And she was very free with this and talking to me, and I'm not sure how many of my siblings, but she said, "I make it a point when my husband and I are together that he knows he's got a woman here for him." She said, "When he walks in the door, closes the door to our bedroom, is I make sure he sees me as he would look at another woman. But I want him to look at me first. And I want to be able to supply him with what he needs." She said, "I would undress in a very provocative way." There's nothing wrong with that. That's good, precious in the sight of God. Those two are for each other. She said, "I made sure he saw me as a husband should." And if we keep those kind of things in our minds and keep them in the right perspective in our relationship with husband and wife, there's no need to go anywhere else. Everything you can possibly want, right there. Wives, make sure provide that for your husband. Husbands, you're not out of this. Oh no. You've got a part in this too, and that's providing for your wife. It's not all just husbands. You're not there just to satisfy you. There's a part you play in that as well. And that's what the scripture tells. You satisfy your wife, she satisfies you. And it's not something that you take lightly. You have to work at it sometimes as a man. Because sometimes it's harder for a man to satisfy the woman. So we need to keep those kind of things in mind to be sure that our love for each other is true and right and is loving.